Good. Happy holidays to you. Are you ready for the new
Right
year?
back at you. Very much so. Very much so. We had a really great 2018, so we're looking forward to an amazing 2019. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm under the impression again that you just stay ready. I don't think there will be a moment when you are not ready for anything. It's just there all the time in your
It's
face.
very hard to
Yes.
catch me off guard.
It's very
Yes, indeed.
beautiful.
So you played a Ricky Smiley intro,
I
which is
did.
weird.
Yes, I did.
Which is very, very weird choice, but okay, I'm with it. All right.
Listen. I played that because today we're crossing a very fine line, right? You, when I talked to you before, you said that you have as a part of your resume, you're a comedian, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and also an author, and I'm going to briefly talk about that because I definitely want to make sure I give you an opportunity to promote your book. I definitely want to keep pushing that because that's very, very important. Very, very important for entrepreneurs. We have a very, very young audience, and I want them to know, that they have options. So we're going to talk briefly about, that, your book, what you do, and then that clip, the reason why I played that clip is because the stage play has made a mockery out of history. And I want you to explain why I played the clip. Number one, what's your relationship with the Ricky Smiley Show?
Okay, my relationship with the Ricky Smalley Show started in 2007. I was brought in to take over the show, and we put the show on the syndication, and it became and it's still the fastest growing morning show in the country. I left that gig in the beginning of 2009. But I had a great time. I'm very proud of the work that I did there. I'm very proud of the remaining cast. And no, it was a great chapter in my career, but definitely not something that I define my career by.
Right. And that was not my reason for playing it again. The reason
Right.
is that I want you to help me introduce the show today. I use your resume because towards the middle and all the way to the end of the show, I really want to talk about the fact that there's a play, a stage play. It's called Slave Play, Slavepley. And basically, it attempted to shed light on the nexus of race, gender, and sexuality. And in doing so, I think it made a huge mess, right? Because it treaded on some topics that, to me, it wasn't funny. Like the Ricky Smiley Show is funny, right? Yes, he's a comedian. You're a comedian. You make light of certain topics. There are certain topics that, to me should just be sacred. Certain things that you just should not, I don't care what kind of rhetoric, whatever your narrative is, you should just leave certain things alone. Like I even have a problem with, excuse me for a second. Again, I'm ranting just a little bit. Give me like 5 seconds and then we'll get back to your resume. But I have a problem with the fact that there's a possibility that they're going to put Harriet Tubman's face on a dollar bill, right? And then what about the strip clubs and stuff? I can't even imagine people throwing the Harriet Tubman bill up in the strip club. Just like I can't even imagine twerking in this slave play and the things that they mock, the things that they address, the things that this guy thinks is funny, just because he believes in his amendment rights, he believes in the power of expression, right? I just think there's certain things that are sacrilegious. You really just should not talk about it. So I use your resume so that you can help us discern between like comedy and not so funny. So that's why I
Right.
did
I
that.
think, yeah, I get it. I think comedy is one of those things that's very, very subjective, but there are things in poor taste. Now, as far as I want to unpack the whole Harriet Tubman $20 bill thing. I feel like if anybody deserves to be on the $20 bill, it's Harriet Tubman. Because every other person with very few, with the circulation of money that we have in place was all slave owners. So to have Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill, I'm not thinking about whether or not someone's going to use it at a strip club. I'm thinking about what it means for someone who risked her life and her health and her well-being and her freedom after getting it to actually be, you know, commemorated on, you know, a piece of currency in this nation that was built by landmass slave-owning white men. You know, that in and of itself is, you know, a spectacular situation. Now, when we talk about this whole slave play thing, the fact that it's in New York, the fact that it's a situation where people are going to see this to watch a slave woman's twerk, a lot of people have a fantasy of the sexualization of black women. A lot of people have fetishized, you know, the idea of interracial sex. And they like the idea of playing, you know, master got in the slave quarters or black buck got loose in the big house. And none of that is funny. None of that is to be put up. You know, you don't really see a whole lot of other cultures, you know, demonizing themselves in a way that black people do it. And there's a difference between self-deprecating humor and just damaging yourself in order to make other people feel comfortable and superior. But those are choices. I respect people's creative processes, but I question the motive behind it, and I also question the money behind it.
Well, I just want to make myself clear, just regarding the whole strip club and $20 bill. The only reason is it just seems that some of us just don't get it, and by that I mean our black folks, we don't get it. So therefore, as white America is trying to whitewash black history, right, I think that I would feel more comfortable if we understood the black Americans that, you know, gave their lifeblood because they were out here trying to contribute to a bigger picture, to American society, that we understood what really happened, you know, that they got it, you know, because this is a very, very crucial hour, and it was a very crucial hour then. And it, like I said, I would just feel more comfortable if we understood and we just protected certain things. I'm not so much concerned about whether or not, you know, they're throwing money in the club, if they're blessing it, the strippers, whatever, you know, and it doesn't matter whose face is on it. It's just that part, you know, how we're being – our history is being revised and erased. And so many people act like they just don't get it. They don't understand. They don't understand the real true struggle. So I struggle with it, right? Not so much that, meaning the activity, but just the lack of appreciation, right? And it just seems like somewhere or another stuff just gets defecated. And it just makes me mad just a little bit, because I just realized I keep going back to what it was said that Harriet Tubman said. She would have freed more slaves had they known they were. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like, dang, when I you know, I make that distinction. But let's get into yours, because I want to introduce you to Judge Brown. And it's already 7:15. Time is flying by. It always does that. But anyway, let's talk about you, you know, for a few minutes here, because I want to make sure that people understand, you know, who you are. So very quickly, can you tell us, you know, you're no longer Taz Daddy, all right? You're Dave Anderson, Mr. Anderson, speaker, coach. You've empowered, like I said, over 1 million people. You travel all over the world. You're the author of a best-selling book. Is doing very, very well, not only in the United States of America, but in a plethora of countries. So let's start there. Let's talk about the business bully and his book.
Okay. So a couple of things. I have 15 best-selling books. Pitch, Close, Upsell, Repeat happens to be the best-selling out of all of my best-selling books. You know, I've been writing books since 2004. Pitch, Close, Upsell, Repeat was like, I think, my seventh or my eighth. You know, book. You know, I started my career in 1987, retired in 2011, primarily in radio, entertainment, stand-up comedy, broadcast management, things of that nature. My career has afforded me a certain level of skills. And as a result of those skills, I realized that they translated very well into business and entrepreneurship and marketing and making money, you know, for people. And so I decided, because I wanted to kind of do my own thing and call my own shot, like, I'm a different kind of person. There are people in this world who are okay with being a worker. They're okay with being somebody's employee. They enjoy the cubicle lifestyle. They enjoy climbing the corporate ladder. I realized later in life than I should have, because I kind of denied it about myself, but I realized that I don't want to climb the corporate ladder. I want to build the building upon which the corporate ladder leads. And so in order for me to be able to do that, that means I have to step away from corporate America and build something that is great enough so that I can build that structure, build that company, and empower other people. And I can't do that if I've got to check in with someone, if I have to ask somebody for a 3% cost of living increase, if I have to ask permission to go to my kid's soccer game, or, you know, see my oldest kid model, whatever the case may be. So I decided to make some changes. And as a result of that, you know, my clients this year have made over $27 million in revenue. So it's a great, great time. Thank you. It's a great time. Congratulations to them. They do the work. I just coach. You know, it's an amazing time for me to be alive and to be living in my truth, you know, and I enjoy what I do. I'm very, very happy. I don't punch a clock. You know, I wear what I want. I grow my hair how I want. I wear my big unprofessional beard. You know, I enjoy my life to the fullest, and I feel like, you know, I am the promise. I am the fulfillment of the promise of my parents and my ancestors. So I'm excited to be here, and I'm honored to be on the show today.
Thank you. I want to make two mentions. The first is the book that we're referencing. Of course, he said he's the author of several books, but the book I introduced when we open up the show, it's called Pitch, Close, Upsell, Repeat. And again, we're talking to Dave Anderson. Pitch, Close, Upsell, Repeat is a practical guide to sales dominance. It's designed to help even the most timid individuals approach sales and business as a game to be played with passion, intensity, and fun. And please go to the website. And I want you to help me with this, Mr. Anderson, because I kept mentioning the website that I referenced and the one I was on, and then you made mention of another one. But right now, bullyshow.com is where I'm at, businessbullyshow.com. And when I spoke to you before, you mentioned another one. I think it had an international title or something. What was it?
You're talking about, no, that was you know, for growth hacking, for people who want to get more training. That's bit.ly/bullygrowth. And there I give away a free training. It's about a 30-minute training where I teach entrepreneurs how to grow their business organically without spending a dime on advertising. You know, advertising is what people use in order to perpetuate their presence. But there's so much, like, we have the internet. There's so much free strategies and so many free things that we could do in order to ramp up our existence to the consumer, that we just don't take advantage of them, primarily because if we know how to use them, we don't use them well. And if we're not sure what we're doing, we get caught up in the technical, I'm not a social media person rhetoric, which is crap, you know. And so I wanted to be able to give something to people that they would be able to latch onto. And so that's why I put up this training called, you know, how to grow your business without spending a dime on advertising. And you can get access to that right now at bit.ly/bullygrowth. But Business Bully Show is my main site. And people always ask, well, why don't you have a site for your coaching business? And the reason for that, Valerie, is I choose who we work with.
Mm-hmm.
I pick those people because I have a culture at my company, and I have a certain type of person that I like to work with, and I have a
mm-hmm.
certain type of person that I don't like to work with. You know, there are people who are just on a money grab. I would rather you take your money and go someplace else if you're going to be a headache, if you're not going to be receptive, if you're just not a nice person. Like, I like to work with nice people who are open-minded and who really want to grow their businesses and leave legacies for their family and make positive impacts, you know, on our society, because I feel like that's important. You know, everybody has a different way of getting to the mountain, and that's fine, but I have a culture of, you know, growth and empowerment and positivity and motivation and brass tacks, knuckle-bleeding hard work. And if you're not up for that, I don't want you anywhere near me or my team. You know, so that's why we don't have a big old site with a list of things that you can just go and buy, because this isn't for everybody.
Right. And, guys, you can definitely go to the website, like you said, businessbullyshow.com. Click on the link that reads speaking, and you can find ways to transform your business. There's a link there where you can schedule, send him an email. Like he said, he's very, very selective. I don't blame you. My vetting process is to die for, very meticulous, because like you, I like energy. I believe in energy. And if I'm not happy mm-hmm. working with you, then, you know, guys, you know, I'm just not money motivated that way. And speaking of motivation, again, Dave is definitely a motivator. He's worked with the motivator himself, the one and only Les Brown. Yeah, I got to read this, Dave, before I open up the line and introduce you to Judge Joe Brown. I love this part about the site. Like I said, guys, you can go to the site, put your name and email in. You can download a free sample of pitch, close, upsell, repeat, and you can also contact him there, and you guys can have a talk, you know, about whether or not he wants to work with you and you like what you hear. But here's what I want to read, because this is the beautiful part of the site. And again, I compliment you on your site because it is a very beautiful site. But it says, are you ready? You're very welcome. Are you ready to make big things happen? You guys know my company's called Big. I believe in big and big things. So it says, contact Dave today to book this prolific Philadelphia motivational speaker for your next event. Dave is one of the world's most renowned inspirational speakers who has delivered encouragement from the stage to many groups, including corporate sales teams and sports teams. Dave will motivate and encourage your group through power of the spoken word. See, I love that part, powerful words are. They do not comprehend, for whatever reason, that words are clothed with energy. And too often, much like today's subject matter, too often we take words lightly and it spills over into something else. So we have to guard our words in order to protect ourselves, protect our hearts, protect our energies. So definitely want to say again, thank you so much for taking this moment to talk with me. And I will have you again repeat, what is the difference between comedy and this rhetoric, real comedy, true comedy, things that actually make you laugh, and this narrative, you know, that they're using to insult, you know, people who have given their lifeblood to our American dream. Right now at this time, what I'd like to do is introduce you, Mr. Anderson, to Judge Joe Brown. Welcome, Judge Joe Brown, to the show. Your mic is live, 3-2-3-4-6.
Looks like the judge is in the house now.
He's in the house.
First off, I have to make this comment. Let's talk about Harriet Tubman on U.S. currency. She was a brave woman. She rescued about 240 people, but she's a historic footnote. It would be a grievous insult to the black race if they put her on a money denomination before they put on somebody like Frederick Douglass, Thurgood Marshall, or Martin Luther King, who impacted millions, tens of millions. They have had a profound impact across the spectrum on this country. And the reason Harriet Tubman has been put out there is because white female lesbians, white lesbians and feminists have decided that they have a strategy to get any woman, they don't care who, on a piece of money, and that is do something that would appeal to black folks, so they'll pushing somebody they want just because it's female. It's an insult. But back to this other thing, I checked some of it out. I listened to an interview of the writer, and I had to keep from gagging through the 27 minutes. This person had his hair all over the place. He had on a long overcoat that was black on the right side, red and some other color plaid on the left side, a gold lining, two white stripes down the side of his pants, and white stripes on his shoes. He looked like a fool. He sounded so obnoxiously gay that I almost puked. And what I determined about what he had written, the play, is it's not really a commentary about life in America and slavery, as he claims. Subliminally, what he came up with was his S&M rough trade sex fantasy. And it's sex fantasies, as has been mentioned. You sometimes people will pick characters for the fantasy, but he picked the slave plantation. And that sick bondage, dominance, and submission message that's in there appeals to somebody like him, who showed us what he was by the way he came across on that interview, his mannerisms, and his speech patterns. And that's what we're getting, is a sick little S&M rough trade sex fantasy. And it is garbage, absolute garbage, and he'll probably make a big movie out of it, spend a lot of money trying to push it, and it'll be a flop. But they want to push it because it is glorification of dysfunctionality, historical embarrassment. And I don't feel sorry for the slaves. I don't give a damn about disrespecting them, because a slave should be disrespected for remaining a slave, because he always had the option to die trying to get away from it. So with that being said, I mean, I find that thing so distasteful, so just out of it. I don't really, it feels uncomfortable talking about it. It's like somebody told me, well, it's about making money or doing this. I said, yeah, you can make a lot of money selling crack too, but should you do it?
Right.
So you can make a lot of money with a play like this, this garbage, but doing it, it says more about the writer than anything else, and he's a sick puppy. He looked it. So, I mean, I got that off my chest. I was disgusted with that thing.
Right. Wow. Mr. Anderson, would you like to say anything to the judge before I play a little clip so you guys can hear what it is that disgusted Judge Brown? You know I'm known for my audio clips, but do you have anything you want to say to the judge? I'll give you guys a few moments.
By
to
the way,
to know
hi.
Each other.
How you doing, brother? I appreciate you.
Yes, sir. I'm doing very well. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I think that, you know, you're 100% on point, but you know as well as I do that they will never, ever do anything that is going to empower black folks and wake them up. You know, they'll never put Thurgood Marshall on a piece of currency. They'll never put Martin Luther King on a piece of currency. Well, they might put Martin Luther King on a piece of currency, but it'll be their whitewashed version of Martin Luther King. It's not going to be the real one. You know, so they're going to do whatever they need to do in order to continue to use us as, you know, scapegoats. And we have to get ourselves into a position where we no longer allow others to use us as scapegoats, and we use ourselves in order to get to another level.
I agree with you.
All right. Mr. Anderson,
and how
before
amen.
We...
There you go.
Amen. Before we move into today's subject matter, can you go on and give us your contact information and also repeat the title of your book so that we know how to support you and book you, or you book us? Cause
oh,
I
absolutely.
Forgot. Very specific vetting process.
Absolutely. Listen, first thing is the book is called Pitch, Close, Upsell, Repeat. You can get it anywhere books are sold, in the stores, online, any and everywhere books are sold. My website is businessbullyshow.com, where you can listen to my award-winning podcast, which has been around for several years now. And, of course, if you'd like to take advantage of that free training in order to grow your business organically, You can go to bit.ly/bullygrowth. bit.ly/bullygrowth.
All right. So I want to use you again one more time because you said it so much better than I did. Please explain to us before we find a way to, before we segue into the conversation about slave play. So hard to say this like a tongue twister. It's about, supposed to be about plantations, American race, slavery, blah, 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 but it's called slave play. It's just a mess all around. But anyway, tell us the difference between comedy, funny, haha, and this kind of humor.
Well, you know, there's an old adage that says comedy is tragedy plus time. You know, laughing is actually a nervous thing that we do because something resonates with us. You know, there is no true funny, and being funny is subjective. However, people will use humor as a way to scapegoat, subjugate, and disrespect other people. When you go through history, especially with black people in America, look at, you know, if you look at vaudeville, those minstrel shows, things of that nature, you know, Amos and Andy, Step and Fetch It, all that kind of stuff was used to denigrate us for the enjoyment and pleasure of the white, you know, of the white bourgeoisie and the white elite. And so you have to take into consideration what's behind what the comedy is. There are certain things that are funny because they resonate with us, and there are certain things that are disgusting that other people laugh. So if you're laughing with something because it resonates with you, that's one thing. If you're laughing at something because you believe that, you know, they're stupid or lower or somehow beneath you, then that's a completely different thing. And what's happening is somebody is taking out a chunk of cash, and they've scapegoated black folks through this guy. No different than the movie Precious. You know, when you go back and look at Precious, it's never been done before. There have been 1,000,001 movies made in Hollywood based on books, based on comic books that you never know. But yet and still, when Precious came out, they did three things. The first thing they did was made sure that you knew that it was based on the novel Push by Sapphire. The second thing they did was they told you it was a black director. The third thing they did was attach Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry's name to it so that black people wouldn't be outraged at the fact that you had a mother who was abusive and jealous of her daughter who was being raped by her father, who she had two mongoloid babies and still had AIDS and was doing things like stealing chicken and running faster than Usain Bolt to get to class. Like, there were all of these little subtexts in there that should have outraged black America, but black America stayed relatively silent, and while Precious went on to win all these awards, because Tyler Perry and Oprah Winfrey were attached to that film. So this is what they do in order to get people to calm down, to quell any type of agitation or uprising before it even starts.
Wow, well said. Judge Brown, do you want to add anything to that before we transition?
No, I think it's being said quite well.
Yeah, I definitely believe that. Again, thank you, Mr. Anderson. So hang tight. I definitely want you to, I want to hear what you got to say about what other people have to say, because now we're going to turn the show into somewhat of a round table. So at this time, I want people to start pressing the number one because I want you to join today's conversation. We want to hear what you've got to say. And to set it up, I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to play a clip, but I'm going to tell you a few things about this thing called Slave Play. And today's show is a review of the stage play. All right, so here are some excerpts from the play. This is some things that I was able to pull from Google. Kenesha begged Mr. Jim, the overseer on the McGregor plantation, to call her a nasty negress as he forces himself upon her. Also, Mistress Elena, the lady of the manor, lustily wills her mother's hand-me-down dildo to penetrate Philip, her violin-playing house slave. Elsewhere on the plantation, Gary, who is black, makes a white indentured servant named Dustin bring him to orgasms by licking his boots. Now, those are just a few excerpts, you know, a few things that happen in the play. And again, I have nothing positive to say. Let me just shut up. Let me just open it up and play this audio clip so you can hear from the director himself. His name is Jeremy.
Jones Cooper. Nothing is as it seems, and yet everything is as it seems in Slave Play. In the play, writer Jeremy O. Harris rips apart history to shed new light on the nexus of race, gender, and sexuality in 21st century America. Critics are raving about this provocative and thought-provoking play, and personally, it's unlike any theater experience I've ever had. Please help me welcome Jeremy O. Harris. How you doing today?
I'm good. It's like that's a lot of kind words about a really scary play. So.
Well, it is a scary play, but it's also like so many things. And in the play, there's a character who has sometimes an issue finding her words, and that's almost how I feel about it. Because after watching it, I just was thinking and feeling so many things, and I think that's so rare. So what you've done is really, really special. How does it feel that something that you've created and that is so personal to share it with people?
I mean, it feels, I tweeted a thing about this yesterday because it's like, it's now, it's like, you know, we did it at school last year. And that,
Yale?
Yeah, at Yale. And that was like a gift unto itself because I saw the impact of the play in sort of our small community. But like when all your friends are talking about it, that's one thing. But when now like there's 200 people every night who get to see it and are taking these conversations that I wanted to engender conversation with this play, right? But now I feel like I can't. I want to be in all of the conversations, and I can't. You know, it's like you're in a group project and your teacher has split you guys all up, and you're like, oh no, I want to be in that group over there and hear what they had to say. But
and I want you to describe it, but for me, it very much explored how our very complex racial history as a country is so much a part of our current trauma for so many people. That sort of was what I took away from it. But how would you describe the play to people?
Yeah, I think that I was saying to I've been saying about this play since I started writing it that like the there's a scar in our country that we pretend like it doesn't exist, you know, and we like think we can ignore this like major wound that's there. And I think that like if we ignore a wound or a scar for too long, like keep putting makeup on it, like you forget you become like disassociated from yourself. So I want to associate us back with ourselves and like have a different conversation about this past that we carry with us all the time.
And somehow you were able to do it with so much humor. What was that decision? Because you're tackling some very heavy themes and topics. But at least for the first half, you're laughing a lot.
Yeah.
So what was your thought process behind that?
I mean, I think, so Sarah Kane's one of my favorite writers. Like, I love Sarah Kane. But I feel like Sarah Kane's humor is so abject that, like, Americans are like, what is this? And I think that, like, you know, and I think what she was working with was, like, you know, looking at gender and, like, mental illness and, like, wanting us to see, like, the sort of putrid, like, nature of, like, you know, like, what we've done with that, over millennia. She just punched you in the face with it. And I was like, I don't think Americans like to be just punched in the face. Like, I think you have to sort of, like, give some honey to Americans and then punch them in the face. And so I think I'm doing that a little bit with the play. I'm like, here's a lot of honey. And, like, and it opens you up, right? Like, it opens you up to a different idea when you're laughing, and then you can it's like Richard Pryor or like, you know, all these amazing comedians who have like a social lens inside of their comedy. I think Slave Play allows people to like actually hear the thing that's being said because they're laughing for so long.
Yeah. And then they have to think about, why is that funny? Why am I laughing? Is that okay? I'm uncomfortable. Should I be uncomfortable? Like, there's so many emotions that you go on in this play.
Yeah, right? Like, so many emotions. Like, guys, you're really listening to, like, the Judge Joe Brown Show, right? And this is, like, really funny but not so much. So, wow, please make sure that you, like, click the button, 929-477-1167, if you like to, like, join the conversation, right? Okay? Because this is all funny, right?